So let me get into a little bit more of the structure, right? So now you see that there's a difference between the small intestinal structure and the large intestinal structure. The real important thing, and you don't see it in this illustration, I'll show you in the next one, is a level of mucus on here, right? So I'll focus on that in the next slide because I have an illustration for that. But the important thing here to see in the small intestine is remember that the small intestine is about 20 feet long. From a circumference standpoint, it's much smaller than the large intestine, but the surface area is massive because of these villi structure, right? So the villi structure is structured that way. These finger-like projections are structured that way to dramatically increase the surface area of the small intestine. And it increases the surface area in order to increase the absorption of nutrients throughout the surface, right? Your body wants to be able to assimilate and absorb nutrients as quickly as possible. So remember I said the mucosa is a number of structures in one. So you see here, this is the mucosa, which is the intestinal epithelial cells themselves. So these are the cells here, the mucus that's on top of the cells. And then this inner layer, this is called the lamina propria or the basolateral circulation. So when things go past the intestinal epithelial cells are in this yellow area right here, they're officially inside the body now, right? And then here's the muscularis. This is that layer of muscle that is the smooth muscle cells that control the contractile motion of the intestines. And then beyond that, this is the submucosa. Now you're past the intestinal lining itself. And then down here is the muscularis, is also another layer of muscle, and then a deeper layer of muscle and intestinal cells as well. But as you can see, once something enters into this yellow space right here, it's already exposed to circulation. You see all of these vessels and veins and lymphatics and all that that are in there. All of those capillaries and all that now are exposed to any sort of toxin or anything that goes through this single cell layer thick of intestinal epithelium, right? And it's already officially inside your body at that point. A lot of it ends up going into the intestines. But within the cells, so you see within the intestinal epithelium, these cells, you see you have absorptive cells. So these are the barrier cells of the intestinal epithelium. Things can either move through the cell, which is the transcellular pathway, or between the cells, between in the tight junctions, which is a paracellular pathway, right? Then you have goblet cells. These are cells that make the mucus layer. You've got the enteroendocrine cells that I mentioned, and then you've got Paneth cells and other immune cells within this layer as well. Now, as you can see, a big difference here with the large intestine is you don't have the finger-like projections the same way. Instead, you have these depths, these called crypts. So it dips down. You don't need as much surface area in the large intestine. It already has a good surface area from the circumference of the large intestine, but you don't need these finger-like projections, right? But on top of this red area here is where you see the mucus sitting. Right. And in the intestines, you got the mucus that's following all throughout these finger-like projections. Right. So hopefully that makes sense that the physiological structures are different. The finger-like projections are really important to note because it provides a lot of surface area and a lot of area for things to go wrong. The mucus layer in the small intestine, as you'll see. One more thing. On the villi, you've got microvilli. Right. So not only do you have millions and millions of these finger-like projections, as you see here, right? On top of each of the epithelial cells, you've got even smaller finger-like projections called microvilli. And at the very border of that microvilli is where the mucus is secreted out. And the mucus adheres to this top layer of microvilli, right? So imagine on top of this microvilli, you get mucus being built up like that. The mucus in the small intestine is actually a different types of structure than the large intestine. I'll show you in the next slide. But the villi create surface area. The microvilli create even more surface area. And right at the surface of the microvilli, you have brush border enzymes. So these are enzymes that are sitting there to further break down food and all that to help absorb it through these absorptive cells. Or you have enzymes that can break down potential toxins and issues. So here's the mucus. So you see the difference in the mucus, right? So this is the mucus layer of the small intestine. It's a relatively thin layer, but it's all over the microvilli, right? And it's in between the microvilli as well. And so, and the microbes can live all throughout this mucus layer here. And the mucus layer is there to slow down the transmission of food particles and anything else that's trying to be absorbed into the system. And this is the lumen side, which is this is the opening of the intestines. This is where the food and all enters in, right? It enters in this way, and then it makes its way through the mucus. And then the mucus slows it down. The microbes in the mucus do some decision making and communicate with the immune cells that you see here in blue, right? And then it transmits information back and forth to the immune cells to tell the immune cells what's coming through. The immune cells then secrete things like antimicrobials, IgA, all kinds of defensins to protect these intestinal epithelium. And then food particles, even that are making it through, get slowed down by the presence of the intestinal epithelium. Sorry, the mucus layer here. Now, in the large intestine, so in the colon, when you see here, there's two distinct layers of the mucus. You've got this top layer here, the outer mucosal layer, which is a thinner layer, which is where all the microbes live. And then you've got this impenetrable inner layer. This inner layer is a much thicker gel-like structure. It's called mucin 2, and there's no microbes that live here. In fact, it's the only sterile part of your body. Right? Almost everywhere else in your body, you've got microbes, even in your blood, even in your cerebrospinal fluid, even in your brain. But this area, which is just adjacent to the highest concentration of microbes in the body, so this area of your body has something like 25 trillion, 30 trillion microbes. And the area just adjacent to it is the only sterile region in your body. Right? That geographic separation is really important for the immune cells that line your intestinal epithelium to make those immune cells comfortable that you're not getting a massive flood of microbes trying to penetrate through that final cell barrier. That geographic separation is really important, and that has to be maintained in order for the large bowel to function the way it should, the immune cells in the large bowel to be happy, and then the microbiome within the large bowel to also function the way it should, right? So hopefully this makes sense on the difference between the small bowel and the large bowel, the mucosal structure, the barrier structure, the mucus in itself, how it's structured, how it functions, and where all the microbes live, right? So remember, in the large bowel, the microbes live in this outer layer of the mucus. In the small bowel, the microbes live everywhere throughout the mucus. And then in large bowel, you've got the sterile region of mucus as well. And you don't have the finger-like projections. You, in fact, have these crypts that are shown by inverted finger-like projections down, right? So we don't need as much absorptive surface area in the large bowel. We need as much as we can get in the small bowel. Now, when you start to look at small bowel diseases, so for example, celiacs, or people that have suffered with a lot of inflammation in the small bowel, people with severe leaky gut or enteropathy, which is this way of defining a devastation of the small bowel structural elements. What you start to get is these microvilli start to shrink, right? They become shorter and shorter and shorter. When you start to see these microvilli shrinking, for example, we go back here. You see these finger-like projections, if they start to shrink down and become smaller and smaller, let's say they were, a millimeter tall, and then they become 0.5 millimeters, 0.3 millimeters, that is something called enteropathy. Enteropathy means that that there's a dying of the tissue, the enteric tissue, right? And that's one of the consequences of having constant inflammation in the small bowel. This is seen in celiac disease because they react violently to the presence of gluten. This is seen in infections like HIV, for example, because HIV, the virus, initially infects gut cells quite a bit, activates something called CD8 positive T cells because it's killing the CD4 T cells. The CD4 T cells are the adaptive T cells. The CD8 T cells are the very inflammatory T cells. And so, because it's constantly activating CD8 T cells in this small gut area, it's causing a lot of inflammatory damage to the small gut. So you start to see a shrinking of the microvilli. What happens when you shrink the microvilli? Well, you also lose surface area, right? And if you lose surface area, you're losing the absorptive capability of the small intestine. The other thing that goes wrong with the small intestine is you lose this mucus layer or parts of it, and then you start damaging these intestinal epithelial cells and you start to find big gaps where those cells have not been replaced fast enough, right? So leaky gut in the small intestine tends to look like a damage to the mucus layer, which is already thin to begin with, and then damage to the tight junctions in between the cells, and then actual damage to the cells themselves, where the cells themselves are kicked out because they're damaged and haven't been filled by a new cell. To fill that space with a new cell, you need the right microbes in the microbiome to elicit an interleukin response. So the microbes in the microbiome manage all of these structural elements, right? So if a cell gets kicked out because it's damaged, the microbiome elicits an immune signal that activates genes to get a replacement cell in that spot. And also the production of mucus is also requires things like short chain fatty acids and other activation by the microbiome. The expression of the tight junction proteins, the proteins in between the cells that can open up the cells and close up the cells, and for the tight junction proteins become damaged, the cells stay open permanently. Those proteins also require the expression of the microbiome. And then, of course, the function of the immune system itself, in order to be tolerant of all the things that are coming through the small bowel, needs the microbiome, as I mentioned, because of the secretory IgA component and the regulatory T cells, right? So all of the structural elements within the small bowel that makes it a dynamic barrier, the mucus, the tight junctions, the immune cells, the defensins, IgA, the regulatory T cells, all of those things require the function of the microbiome to keep them up and upregulate them. Same thing in the large bowel, the production of this mucin 2 layer, this sterile layer, which is very important, the tight junctions, again, the replacement of damaged epithelial cells, the production of that top layer of mucin, the production of antimicrobials to defend against dysfunctional bacteria that may actually set up in that mucin layer. All of those things require the microbiome. So all of the structural elements and the functional elements of the barrier system require a functional microbiome and a diverse microbiome with lots of keystone species in order for them to act the way they're supposed to act, right? So you can easily see as the microbiome starts to dismantle and starts to shift, losing diversity, losing keystone species and protective species, increasing the presence of pathogens that aren't helping these structural elements, you start to see how easily the structural elements start to become dysfunctional. And given you have 4,000 square feet of this area, it's not hard to see how certain areas can start to become dismantled and propagate more and more dismantling throughout the system, right? So the epithelial cells and tight junction, again, the epithelial cells is that physical barrier that marks the last vestige of a separation between outside the body and inside the body. When something goes through this final epithelial cell and ends up down here in what we call the basolateral circulation, it's officially inside the body now. The tight junctions are the spaces in between. There are 40 or so proteins in between each of these cells called claudin and occludin proteins. They're like shoelace-like proteins. They cinch the cells shut, and then sometimes they allow them to open up to allow certain things through, but normally they're supposed to be cinched shut. These proteins and the expression of the proteins are dependent on the microbiome, but you have to have those proteins functioning to keep this barrier system functioning properly. Zonulin is one of those proteins that kind of regulates the opening and closing. This is why they've used zonulin in certain research trials to try to gain an association between elevated zonulin levels and potential indication of leaky gut. And it's not a direct diagnostic yet. Zonulin is still kind of correlative to that, at least the way you read it in your stool samples. But keep in mind that that's where zonulin functions. It functions as a regulator of the opening and closing of the tight junctions. And when the mucosal barrier and tight junctions are compromised, it leads to this immune chaos, creating inflammatory responses, right? And keep in mind that the mucosal barrier and the tight junctions become compromised because of a dysfunctional microbiome to begin with, and because that dysfunctional microbiome is also not helping the secretory IgA and the Treg cells, your immune system is going to be going haywire in that junction to begin with, right? So all of this becomes a self-perpetuating cycle.